This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Word for Word. Dean Beck with you.
And Sue Wilkinson also.
And today we're going to speak to two men who will be competing against each other in the state election. Because in less than 3 weeks, Victorians will head to the polls and decide who it is that will govern the state for the next 4 years. The current Labor Premier, John Brumby, is keen to win this election as it will be the first time that he will hold the state's top job in his own right. Now, if Labor do win a record fourth term in office, it would mark the longest consecutive reign for a Labor government in Victoria's history.
Now, Dean, few could argue that Victoria has managed to ride the global economic crisis virtually unscathed. But whilst Labor government has presided over a strong economic growth and job stability, critics believe that after 12 years behind the wheel, the current office bearers are incompetent, arrogant, and they're failing to deliver on basics such as policing, transport, education, and hospital waiting times.
Now, it happened in the UK. Last week, it happened in the USA. And when the recent federal election returned to hung parliament, our nation experienced it like never before. Some call it a new political paradigm, whilst others say it's an unworkable scenario that delivers too much power to a handful of independents. Whatever it is, the recent federal election left Victorians in no doubt. The Greens are here to stay, bigger and bolder and with more force than ever before.
Now, political commentators are speculating a shift to the Greens of somewhere between 14 and 20%. The prospect of the Greens holding the balance of power in the Victorian state election is a clear and present danger to both Liberal and Labor parties alike.
One thing, however, is for certain. If you live in a marginal seat or in a seat where the Greens have been successful in recent times, you can be sure that your community will benefit from the pork barrelling from both the major parties as they try to win your vote. Now, many safe heartland and blue ribbon seats across Victoria are fully aware of the irony in the economics of such bribes.
Ooh, now, one of those key marginal seats is, of course, Richmond. It's the state's second smallest electorate at just 14 square kilometres. It sits in the bend of the Yarra River and Merri Creek east of Punt Road, Victoria Parade and Nicholson Street. It includes the old working class, but increasingly gentrified suburbs of Abbotsford, Burnley, Clifton Hill, Collingwood, Fitzroy, Richmond and, of course, parts of Fitzroy North.
The 2006 census revealed Richmond to be less affluent than neighbouring regions per capita due to the high number of public housing tenants concentrated in Housing Commission towers. On a statewide basis, the Richmond electorate has the second highest proportion of residents of working age, 25 to 64. It has the fourth lowest proportion of couples with children. It has the third highest proportion of rented dwellings. It has the second highest proportion of residents who use bicycles to get to work. And it has the third highest rate of residents that rely on public transport to get to and from work each day. Now, since 1908, the seat of Richmond has been held by the Labor Party. However, in 2002 and again in 2006, Labor was forced to accept the preferences from the Greens to retain that seat.
So since 1999, the Richmond electorate has been served by former Melbourne Lord Mayor Richard Wynne. Richard is well known and some might say well loved by Victoria's GLBTI community due to his outspoken stance regarding legal equity for Victorians regardless of their sexuality. As Victoria's Minister for Housing, Richard Wynne showed extraordinary foresight and leadership with the development of Elizabeth Street Common Ground. The precinct is Australia's most supportive and inclusive community housing development and undoubtedly a befitting legacy to a man who's devoted so much of his life to serving the public. We welcome word for word Mr. Richard Wynne.
Well, Sue, thank you. And thank you, Dean, very much for that extensive overview of the electorate and some of the issues that we are confronting, and welcome, of course, to my friend Tom McFeely. Of course,
well, Richard, if I may do the introduction,
please do. I was hoping you would
at some stage.
Get to Tom as well.
The recently re-endorsed Liberal Party candidate for the seat of Richmond is a man well known to Melbourne's gay community. He's a successful businessman. He's a publican, a poof, and now a politician. Often outspoken and always passionate, it's no surprise that the colourful Scotsman has already made his mark amongst the Conservative rank and file within the Liberal Party.
As proprietor of the Peel Hotel in Collingwood, Tom made world headlines when he managed to win that, remember it, the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal ruling granting his hotel an anti-discrimination exemption so that he could exclude heterosexuals. It was a world first where he was allowed to discriminate on the basis of one's sexuality rather than one's gender.
Now, in 2006, Tom and his partner of 18 years tied the knot at the British Consulate here in Melbourne. Now, he's opposed to gay marriage because of its religious connection, but he certainly supports civil partnerships and equality under law. Would you please welcome, word for word, Mr. Tom McFeely.
Good morning, Dean. Good morning, Sue. And Richard, hi again. Thank you.
Now, we're not going to have a water fight or any sort of thing going on here, are we? Do we have to have the water cannons out ready?
Well, before
you are friends, aren't you?
Seconds out, round one.
Let's put a few rules into place here. I'm going to ask you shortly to give a 3-minute spiel as to who you are, what you are, your background, what you stand for. It's not a pitch, it's just about you. And you'll get 3 minutes each to do that. I do have the stopwatch, so we'll be keeping an eye on you.
That's now, just because he likes to touch the buttons, but anyway.
Then, after we've had the 3-minute profile, we'll have 5 minutes where Sue and myself and the listener will concentrate on Richard first. Tom, you're allowed to add your bit to that as well. And then we'll concentrate on you, Tom, and we ask you, Richard, to contribute to that also. Then we will wrap it up towards the end and we'll get a 2-minute pitch from both of you as to why Victorians should vote for you in the seat of Richmond.
Do I get 2 minutes as well? They could vote for me, Dean. I could go for this.
Get nothing. So to kick it off, can I please ask Richard Wynne to tell us a little bit about you, please.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Dean, and thanks for the opportunity to talk again to your listeners here on Joy. My background is basically inner city Melbourne, where I was born and have lived all of my life. I come from a large family. I have a large working class family. I have 7 sisters, and almost a year ago, to the day, my brother passed away. So there were 9 children. My mother died when I was very young, 12 years of age, and my father a few years later. So it's been a large working class family. So I understand what it's like to basically have to struggle a bit. We were a 1-income family. My father was a wharfie. He worked on the wharfs, Melbourne ports. And but we all got, my family understood, my parents understood the critical importance of education. So I was educated at the local Catholic school in North Melbourne, both at junior and senior level, and had the opportunity then to go on to further studies, as some of my, most of my siblings did as well. I'm the youngest of the whole lot. So that was an opportunity for me, obviously, to get my degrees in social work and criminology. And I really have since then devoted my working life to public housing. I started my career in the Kensington and Flemington high-rise estates, and have really spent all of pretty much all of my working life in support of low-income people. And indeed, I think that that's a worthy cause. I mean, it's a great cause, and I do thank you, Sue, for the comments you made about Common Ground, because it's kind of at the other end of what has been a long journey for me of 25 years working in housing. So for me, I guess it's about social justice. Social justice has really driven all of my life, really seeking opportunities for low-income people to get a fair go, to get a fair cut of the action. And I think that my track record in that context is pretty strong. Also, the GLBTI community have been very important to me. Tom and I, it's a funny thing, we're sitting here actually as friends really as much as opponents, so it's a rather strange conversation for us to be having. But, you know, I respect Tom, he's a person of integrity, and his politics simply are different to mine. But in terms of what we both believe in, I suspect we have very few differences. I worked my way, obviously, I have to finish now, do I?
Temporarily.
Five seconds. Okay, so basically, look, that's my background. Melbourne City Council, obviously, a City of Melbourne councillor. And
that's about it.
We'll get to some more. I'm interested.
Gee, that was quick.
Time
it
flies.
Now we invite Mr. Tom Feely to tell us a little bit about his past, present, and thoughts on the future.
Oh, Dean, my past, well, been colourful. Actually, I'm just sitting here listening to Richard and I actually think to myself, my God, we may have been separated at birth. You know, because like Richard, I too. I'm very passionate, I think, about social justice issues. Yes, we disagree perhaps how we might achieve that. But anyway, back to my background. Separated at birth, you know, public housing. You know, I spent my growing up life in public housing, both the tenements in Glasgow and the high-rise tours of Glasgow on the 15th floor. And when elevators don't work, God, that's a killer, you know. Anyway, as most of your listeners know, grew up in Glasgow, came to Australia 20-odd years ago, fell in love with Melbourne straight away. You know, but when I got here, you know, it was the world's most livable city. And I thought to myself, how lucky is that? It's better than winning the lotto to find yourself in a city that you fell in love with. Anyway, arrived here on the shores of sunny Melbourne, you know, got my first job down at Greasy Joe's in St Kilda, you know, washing dishes and waiting tables and things. Found myself, of course, going through the hospitality industry, you know, ending up at the Peel. As for my family and my personal background, yep, it's almost a sort of typical story. You know, father dies when one's very young. Most of my uncles and what have you, like Richards, you know, had worked on the wharfs and docks of the Glasgow shipyards. I've got a brother who haven't talked to in quite some time. I think the gay issue is a bit of an issue for him. I suppose he's not listening to the station today, so I probably can announce he's my actual nephew. Well, he's come out the closet a little bit in the web, but I don't know if my brother's aware of that. But that's Terence, if you're listening, I'm sorry. And Mark, if you're listening, I'm sorry, I've just outed you. you know, I don't think they could get joy in Scotland, you know.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry, but they can.
Oops.
On air at joy.org.au.
Mark, son, I'm really sorry. But look, I found myself, I mean, coming to another country, and I now have, you know, an extended family here. You know, my brother might be over there, but I do have nieces and nephews here as well, and the Scottish family and the GLBT community here, and I consider very much part of my family. That's basically my background. I think everyone knows, I suppose, as you colourfully described earlier, you know, my notoriety in relation to the Peel. Yes, as Richard very kindly pointed out, you know, I'm a man of my word, I'm a man of integrity, and we may disagree on some political issues, but I think both of us are very passionate about what we want to do. And as Richard says, you know, I've considered him a friend for many years, and yeah, it's very interesting to sit here just about to put the gloves on, you know. Anyway, and thank you for the opportunity. And I'd like to thank Richard for the opportunity as well.
And I'd like to thank you for finishing on time. So well done.
You are listening to Word for Word with Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson.
And in this special edition of Word for Word, we're speaking to Richard Wynne, the current sitting member for the electorate of Richmond in Melbourne's inner northeast, I guess. And
I don't think it's northeast.
Everyone, is it not?
In a north.
And Tom McFeely, who is running for the Liberal Party in the same electorate. Now, gentlemen, we're going to put the clock on again, and we'll have 5 minutes of us asking a few questions of Richard.
Richard, now, when you were talking about working-class families and giving them a fair share. How does that work? Because a lot of people get really pissed off that money comes from people who are earning over $80,000, you get a high tax rate, you work hard, you know, you do your thing, you get taxed more. Is that your sort of plan, or has that been the plan over time to get more tax from the higher income earners to hand out to the lower, or are there other ways and means to help the lower income families?
Well, it's a question of what you believe in as a government, and we believe that you can't be the best state to live in unless you're also the fairest. So our key priority areas as a government are, of course, the major issues really which Dean touched upon in his introduction. They are about health, education, public transport. I mean, they're the key big ticket issues that people are concerned about. Obviously, obviously we also want to ensure that everybody gets an opportunity. So one of the crucial things is education. Education is the ladder upon which people can achieve. And certainly from my point of view, my own education created a pathway for me. So that's why I'm so passionate about the opportunities that education provides to people.
I'm a teacher, so I'm with you on that one.
Good, excellent.
But how does the funding go? How do we get the funding to help the families to support themselves? You're saying through education, obviously, you know, you teach a man to fish kind of thing.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's if you're talking about low-income people...
Yes, absolutely.
The most important thing you can do is provide them with safe, affordable and secure housing. I mean, that's my job. I'm the Minister for Housing, and it is crucial. You know, really, as Tom said earlier, I mean, he grew up in a public housing high-rise development in Scotland. We are putting on the ground, over the next 2 years, 6,500 units of public and social housing in partnership with the Gillard government. I mean, that's the biggest build of public and social housing we've had in decades.
How does it get funded? Sorry, Dean, that's the point I'm trying to drive to.
Well, it's funded. Well, in this particular nation-building projects are being funded by the federal government. So it's our broader tax base being redistributed through all of the states.
I think it's called the GST, isn't it?
Well, it's a combination. But we should not also forget that the Brumby government gave me $500 million, half a billion dollars, two and a half years ago to build public and social housing. This was the biggest commitment by a state government ever to public and social housing. I mean, that's a fantastic thing. And you see it rolling out.
Richard, on
including
that,
things like the Common Ground Project down in Elizabeth Street, which we can talk about a bit more.
Yeah. On the public housing project, I live just near Victoria Street.
Yep.
On the other side of that, on the Richmond side, is the old style housing.
The Elizabeth
Commission.
Street walk-ups. Yep.
Yep. Now, every day from about 7:38 o'clock in the morning till about 10:30. In the morning, and then again from about 2:30 in the afternoon till about 7 o'clock at night, that street is chock-a-block full of drug deals.
Sure.
If you go to any of the railway stations and look underneath the platforms, there are needles everywhere. There are police up and down that street 24/7 doing strip searches on the footpath. And we're about to spend, or the council is about to spend, millions of dollars making that a precinct.
Sure.
Something's not fitting.
Well, yeah, can I interject for a second?
Not really, Go on.
One very quick comment, going back to what you said, Sue. I'm going to say, where does the money come from? I think it was Maggie Thatcher, and I can be corrected on this. You know, they said, socialism is fine, you know, but when you, it has to stop when you run out of spending other people's money. Now, a lot of people I know, and a lot of regulars at the pub will relate to this. You know, we're being taxed too much. Even by, you know, by stealth, you know, the cost of living for basic services constantly goes up. We're left with no money in our pocket, And as I say, it's all very well to go about spending record money, but where does it come from?
That's good to know. I'm noting down where the gloves flew on that one.
I mean, just to respond to Tom, we have just been given again a AAA credit rating by the ratings agencies. We are, I think, a state that has managed the finances extremely well. We have indicated that we will have an underlying surplus every year. So independently, our government has been rated as very good fiscal managers.
And I mentioned that in the introduction. I'd like to get back to the question at hand.
Sure.
And that is...
The drugs issue. Sure,
and
I don't,
and yep. Look, the traders down that street are sick and tired of it, but they... I feel threatened by it. So
mums and prams are sick and tired.
That's the fights every day.
Sure, it's
just appalling.
I know Victoria Street extremely well. I spend a lot of time down there. The Richmond Asian Business Association is a trader group there. I work with them extremely closely.
You know how they feel.
I'm not going to shy away from the fact that there is a significant drug issue in Victoria Street, but it should not necessarily be linked to the high-rise estates that are behind it. That link is not necessarily the case.
Sure.
But can I say to you, Dean...
I understand
Where we, in fact, have evidence, credible evidence of people who are residents of the public housing estate dealing in drugs, we will move to evict them, and we have, and we will continue to do so. Now, this has not made me particularly popular with some of my mates in the legal community, legal services, and so forth. But I tell you, for the residents living on those public housing estates, all they want is a decent environment to live in. And I can say to you, absolutely, my long experience in this, you only need three or four of these people who might be living in a tower of 20 floors who can ruin the amenity for everybody.
What could actually help is a safe injecting room.
No, well, we don't support a safe injecting room. It's not part of our government's policy. Ours is a harm minimisation approach. I'm very aware of the Sydney experience. I've been to King's Cross and looked at that a few years ago now. I mean, that is one response. Our response is a harm minimisation response, where, of course, the opportunity is made available for people to get clean needles and kits and so forth. And I think that's the way that we propose to go.
Well, I've given you an extra minute because of Tom's interjection. Now, Tom, it's your turn to cop a 5 minute spurt.
Now, Tom, some people don't particularly like your choices in the anti-discrimination area there, because there was a lot of hoo-ha, particularly from girls, about the peel. And so we're going to go there first, I know. But it is a stance political-wise in the sense of that, you know, you're able to make, that you were able to fight this battle. Let's talk about the reasons why you actually went the direction you did and the Discrimination Act that followed.
Yeah, okay, I will try and make this as quick as I can.
You've got about 3 seconds to do this one.
Basically, this was to do with the right of refusing entry to people and being honest with them without them being able to take legal action against me. How many people go to a club and they're told, sorry, regulars only, members only, etc., etc.? I increasingly found myself in situations at the front door, particularly with Bucks Nights and things like that, where all they wanted was the truth. Are you refusing entry because we're a Bucks party? It got physical several times, and at the end of the day, in order to avoid a more physical situation, I was telling the truth. Yes, it is because you're a large Bucks party, etc., etc. And that's all people want to be told at the door. At the same time, however, given the laws, I was putting myself in a very risky situation where I could have been sued, and no publican wants to be sued, and that's basically why.
Okay, because a lot of lesbians basically didn't like the whole gender versus sexuality.
Well, it's unfortunate in relation to the lesbian issue. You know, it's unfortunate, and we've got statistics to prove it, that the most physical dramas we've had at the Peel in 22 years tended to involve large groups of girls. It's just an unfortunate situation. We had to rectify that. You know, we are not a troublesome pub, but when you've got stools and chairs and pool cues, you know, that type of altercation, it was always with the girls. And again, I had to protect my main patrons, which are gay guys.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we could argue that one for years, but let's move on to a little bit more political.
Now, Tom, you went out of your way to, I guess, make it public, your signing of the marriage register, or whatever it was that you did with the British consulate with your partner of 18 years. It has your views on gay marriage have been somewhat reported in all sorts of ways within the local gay press and also within the mainstream media as well. Would you like to clarify that for us?
Okay, I'll try and quickly clarify it, because what I don't want to do is continually talk about gay stuff. You know, sure. I'm not the gay candidate, the candidate for Richmond and stuff. In relation to gay marriage, I'm all for recognition of relationships, but I understand the word marriage is a contentious one. And even as I just said recently this week, you know, we as a community have to be cohesive, work out what we want before we expect heterosexual politicians to work it out for us. There's debate in their own community right now in relation to transgender, intersex, the word marriage or the rights of marriage. Now, that's what I believe we want sorted out. To include the word marriage in legislation right now, I think, is a dangerous request. I don't think society is ready for the word marriage to be included in anything we do. And I'm all for equal rights. And one further point on that, I was quite disappointed, I think, this week or last week, I think, Mr Brumby, you know, he had a whole list of legislation, what he was going to do, and I find it almost disgusting that he's going to recognise me and Dan's relationship because we've done it at the British Consulate, but he won't do anything for Victorians. I can't understand that.
So I'm not sure what that point is, Tom.
Sorry, there was a point that there was reported in the press that I think John Brumby indicates that the my relationship with Dan, or the recognition, because it's an overseas...
and recognised as real in that country.
Yes, that the Labour government is what will actually recognise that.
But not allow its own voters to do the same.
Yeah. Well, that's in fact not right.
Right.
That's in fact not right.
That,
so I ought to clarify it. So we've announced that we will reform the law to treat couples recognised under equivalent laws in other states, territories and overseas as if their relationship was registered in Victoria. That's what we'll be doing.
Will be, but aren't currently. Is that right?
Aren't currently, but we will continue.
Should they be re-elected, that's will happen.
That is our commitment. I'll say it again, Tom, so we're clear. Yep. Reform the law to treat couples recognised under equivalent laws in other states, territories and overseas as if their relationship was registered in Victoria.
Well, I'm sure we're going to come to the point soon about the whole marriage thing, but we'll keep on going.
But the interesting point there is, and I think what Tom's getting at, is that what you did with the British consulate is far greater than a Victorian state registry.
May well be. But, I mean, do you want to move on to this issue now? We might as well, because it's front and centre.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
The issue of marriage, as such, is contested space, as Tom has already indicated. My view is very clear. I support it. I think it's... I can't see why there should be any form of discrimination in relation to a person's particular legal standing. We created the Relationships Register, which was an important first step. I noted, I think, only a couple of days ago that and clearly it's federal law, but the debate is still very live in a federal sense, and I think people would have seen some comments by Mark Abib in the federal a senior minister in the Gillard government around those issues. So I mean, it is still a live debate.
And can I just make one further point?
Yes, sure.
I noticed the Greens in particular are out there trying to harness the pink vote, inverted commas. But the reality...
He's got a pink shirt on.
We have noted that. You know,
well, he wasn't going to wear green, was he?
But I think the reality is it's the mainstream parties, effectively, that will pass whatever legislation. It needs the agreement of mainstream parties and the bigger parties before any legislation goes through. So it's all very well for the Greens to promise whatever. If it's not practical and it hasn't been thought through first.
Tom, on a local electorate issue, one of the main thoroughfares, again, my backyard, Victoria Street, has had an absolute balls up in regards to its clearway parking, and it's subsequently cost both the state government and the council more than $300,000 each. That's a lot of money to come up with pretty much of a non-answer, and... Why aren't our government entities working together? Why did this sort of crap happen?
Dean, I'm constantly amazed when I read reports in the press about you know, local governments fighting with state governments, who fight with federal governments. You know, as a ratepayer and taxpayer, I'm just ropeable about this when I read that $330,000. One of my platforms in this election is to try and get state and local to work together. I mean, it involves public transport, it involves the through traffic that have to come through the Richmond and Collingwood and Fitzroy. And yes, it does involve, you know, thinking about freeways, it involves clearways. Now, I think the government's approach to clearways is wrong. I think, yes, we want traffic to flow through, but why do they have to flow through shopping strips? There are other options out there, but I think it's disgraceful, I mean, that councils and state have to fight on this issue. I mean, they're all elected representatives of the people, and all they seem to do, the barristers make a fortune at the moment with all these disagreements that go on.
It's ridiculous.
And I spend too much money in rates and taxes.
Well, the people that are losing out for both of you in these clearway discussions are the people who can't read the signs or get it wrong or whatever, and they're being towed away. I saw a poor mum the other day with a little child crying with the tow truck driver going, and he's going, well, you know, whatever. And she's crying. Obviously, they were on their way to the airport or something. Something happened, whatever. And you just go, are you missing the point?
The traders aren't too wrapped about
traders
it.
Traders aren't
there's
happy.
There's also a severe lack, you know, particularly in Yarra. You know, I think the city of Yarra, I think, charges the most for parking than anywhere else. You know, I might be wrong in that, but I think state government and local government in the area, if we can find a better way to provide adequate parking, you know, that would actually help the traders, help those establishments at night, you know, the cafes and the restaurants. You know, we want a lively inner city, but at the same time, we have to look after those people who visit the suburbs and who don't necessarily just live there as well.
We're speaking with Labor Party MP for the Richmond electorate, Richard Wynne, and the Liberal Party candidate, Mr. Tom McFeely. This is a Word for Word on the Community Radio Network.
From Melbourne's Joy 94.9, nationally on the Community Radio Network, this is Word for Word.
You are listening to Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network. We're going all political today. We are talking to the Labor member for Richmond, who is Richard Wynne, and, of course, the Liberal candidate for Richmond, Tom McFeely. We have quite a few emails and messages to get through, so we're going to try and do some of those now.
Gentlemen, Al says, neither party seems to sees a need to change or restructure the state's stamp duty, despite the vast increase of housing costs. Can I get a quick 30-second answer from both of you on that?
As someone who's had to spend a little bit in stamp duty recently, it has to be lowered. I think it's ridiculous. My personal view is we have to look at this. It's fine to continually say, oh, the state's in surplus, the state's got all this money. You know what? Where does that money come from? It comes from me and you and all your listeners.
Am I right in saying Victoria is the highest rate of stamp duty than any other state?
It's not quite the that's not strictly accurate. It depends on how you wrap this together. I mean, stamp duty obviously is an issue that people have some there's quite a deal of commentary on, but we have still the most affordable housing across the eastern seaboard, and of course our first home owner schemes, our first home owner grants both in Metropolitan Melbourne and indeed regional Victoria have made a significant difference.
But there's an argument that the home assistance buyer grant, they've actually pumped up the prices of housing because you've got a lot of people coming in at the lower end. And
yeah, I've heard
got
that.
This,
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's an argument that people use, but there's very little evidence for that. People say, oh, well, all it does, if you get a $10,000 or $12,000 first-time owner grant, it just pumps up the price. There's no evidence for that.
Okay. Now, what about the fact, stamp duty? What's the purpose of it? I buy a house, I get charged stamp duty. That house gets sold again and again six times over its lifetime. The government continues to get stamp duty. Can you define what the purpose of that is other than a revenue raiser? Either of you?
I have to say personally, I agree with you. I realise obviously governments need income, and I'm not naive. But I think stamp duty was set up, you know, obviously a long time ago.
When you bought a house once.
Yeah, and I mean stamp duty is not just on houses. So you're going to hire a car.
Cars and everything, but I'm just tackling the housing one.
Yeah, I think we have to look at how the states get their finances, and these sorts of stacks by stealth,
right,
is something I'm personally opposed to.
Richard.
Well, I mean, I again reiterate, we are still the most affordable state across the eastern seaboard. I mean, we have put in place an urban growth boundary, which will control how development occurs, and you have to put in the basic infrastructure to support people in those emerging suburbs, and that's where tax revenues go to.
I could argue that one for ages, considering people's incomes.
But all the sort of evidence and the things you read in the press about it's affordable, it's this. All I can say, well, it doesn't feel like it, and it's certainly for everyone I talk to, it doesn't feel like it.
Now, we've had a listener text in to say that both major parties have lost the plot when it comes to gay marriage, that a relationships register is a waste of time. Why should we pay $180? And what does registering a marriage mean? I mean, what is that compared to what the heterosexuals get? What are the cost differences between the two?
I thoroughly agree with your listener. It's a waste of time. Now, what we want is equal recognition, but I say that the word marriage is something we as a community have to sort out whether we want that included or not.
Now, whilst both major parties tend to be beholden to the religious right and, the family first and so on, why is leadership not shown in this?
Right, well, look, you said beholden to the religious right. I tend to disagree with you. I mean, if you look at, there's religious overtones in the word marriage, but 25% of people are getting married in churches. And yet you can walk up to the Dandenong Forest and have a witch weave a crystal over you, and that's called marriage. But
it's not recognised, though.
But you've got to acknowledge why it was defined as between a man and a woman first and
I
foremost.
I want to hear from Richard on this one.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry, Richard.
Well, I mean, the point about the relationship register is that it provides an opportunity for same-sex couples to establish some legal standing, and that is incredibly important in relation to a whole range of interactions that same-sex couples have with all sorts of institutions, whether it's banks, lending institutions, licensing issues, insurance, all sorts of the day-to-day interactions that we have. There are numerous occasions where, in fact, you need to establish the basis of your relationship.
Okay, now we've got so much to get through. I want to say GM farming, are you both for or against? Can we have a view from...
Genetically modified. We have trials of that have been in the state.
So that's a four.
So Labor's for.
It's here now. I mean, we do have trials that are ongoing at the moment.
I think it's an overall. I'm personally for it. When I look, especially the aspect went to with other countries and those people who are screaming out to be fed.
Now we did promise a 2-minute wrap up and a pitch from both of you. And
we can do that. I just want to go through these, just at least we can say these points that people have made. We don't want marriage, we want equality, says Peter. And also, both parties have given a non-answer on why we have stamp duty. Neither actually answered the question. So we'll give the 2-minute each now.
Richard Wynne, why should we vote for you in the forthcoming state election?
Well, equality is the key to this. When the Bracks and then Brumby governments came to power... and if I was sitting here in 1999, Tom McFeely and I did not have the same rights. We now have the same rights in the state of Victoria, and that is a great thing. That is a great thing. We wiped away years and years of inequality and prejudice between that was there between heterosexual and gay community, and that is a fantastic thing. That is something that we should be immensely proud of. We have released in this campaign, I think, a fantastic set of supports that we are going to provide to the GLBTI community, including for the first time supporting a $2.5 million package of support, which includes things like $400,000 to support a GLBTI peak body for the first time. A whole of government advisory committee where the voice of the GLBTI community is heard at the highest level. Ongoing funding for Midsummer, $100,000 for the Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria, $200,000 over 4 years to support the gay and lesbian switchboard, but most importantly also addressing particularly for young people homophobia and supporting particularly young people, young students in school to tackle classroom homophobia, I think is a fantastic thing. You can't be the best state to live in if you're not also the fairest state to live in. And I'm immensely proud of what our government has done to support the GLBTI community. Tom McFeely and I today share the same legal rights, and that is a fantastic thing.
Thank you, Richard. Now, we're over to Tom McFeely. Why should we vote for you, other than your pink shirt?
Other than my pink shirt, I'll very quickly, you should vote for me because I actually want to represent everyone in Richmond. Yes, we're sitting here on Joy FM, we're sitting talking about some gay issues, but there are many, many things that affect all of us. The cost of living, public transport, safety in the streets, integrity in government. You know, we all want better things, we're all affected by everything. I would also like to say to those out there, I know many of your listeners share the same beliefs as me. You know, despite their background, their occupation, the suburb they live in, their race, their religion, the sexuality alone, you know, it doesn't matter of that. You know, you might not consider yourself a typical liberal, but am I a typical liberal? No. We share some beliefs. Don't let all stereotypes, you know, force you to vote a particular way, and don't allow your vote to be taken for granted. You know, Labour has taken the gay vote for granted for many years. Now the Greens are trying to encourage you to vote for them by promising things that they can't deliver on. You know, if you do share the same beliefs as me, you've got the same concerns as me, and a lot of the issues I've just mentioned, you know, consider me. I want to represent everyone in Richmond. I'm an individual candidate, and I promise to go out there and work for everyone in the community, including, obviously, our own community.
I want to touch on the fact that it's lovely hearing both of those opinions. You're all for social justice and so on. And we start off our lives, and I'm sure you do as politicians, you've got grand ideas, you know, terrific things, and you can implement things when you're in power. But at the end of the day, even if you believe in whatever you believe in, your government says you have to toe this line, therefore your personal opinion goes squat, does it not?
Well, I'd have to disagree with you. In the Liberal Party, yeah, we are encouraged to be individuals. And unlike the Labour Party, if they actually disagree with each other, they are not allowed to cross the floor and vote differently.
Richard?
In the Liberal Party, we are.
Is that true?
Well, that's not quite right, Tom. It depends on what the issues are. I mean, obviously, we've had conscience votes on a range of issues over the last couple of terms of government, particularly in relation to the abortion issue, where people had a conscience vote, and indeed members of the Liberal Party, members of the Labor Party, did cross the floor to vote in particular ways because of their own conscience and deep belief on some of these issues. But on occasions, it is fair to say on some of these social issues, the Liberal Party did crack the whip and say, no, we're voting as a party block.
Gentlemen, we must finish there. I want to thank you both so much for taking time out of your day to come and speak to us here at Joy 94.9. Richard Wynne, the Labor Party MP for the seat of Richmond, and Mr. Tom McFeely, who will be the Liberals candidate in the forthcoming state election on November 27. Now, a transcript and a podcast of today's interviews with Dick
Who's
and
Tom. Who's
going
for the head
will be
job
available.
Was what you wrote.
We'll be available within a couple of days.
That's why I need a new co-host.
Now you can download that from joy.org.au. And if you would like to get in touch with the program, you can do so by emailing wordforword@joy.org.au.
And finally, just from a couple of listeners, why does Labor, which we don't have time to answer, but at least you're hearing the questions, why does Labor only give funding for GLBTI organisations just before the elections? They're trying to buy some last-minute votes. That's from Kevin. And Don says, good afternoon. The GLBTI community will get as little as possible from both major political parties while giving us as much as they are forced to give. So it's up to us to demand what we want, vote for someone else until then. Thanks for your input, everybody.
Thank you very much for your input, and thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Dean Beck.
And I'm Sue Wilkinson, and you've been listening to Word for Word.
Bye for now.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley and presented by Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.